Sci-Fi Party Line.
To another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line. This is your hostess, Kat, and I have a newbie on the line, and her name is Amy.
Hello. Say,
hey. Hello. Where are you from? Where do we find you?
Los Angeles, California.
Cool. And she is joining us for our Doctor Who Waters of Mars episode, and she loves Doctor Who, so we brought her in here, and we have a regular cast of characters, which is Eric.
Hey.
Carl.
What's happening, Kat?
Jeff.
Yo.
Oh, took too long there. You know, I don't like that. And Will. And we're going to talk about Doctor Who, Waters of Mars. We've been waiting on this episode for, like, I don't
Ever.
Know, 8 years?
Ever and a half.
Way too long.
I'm going to reserve how I feel. I want to go with newbie. Let's go, Amy. What did you think about, how long have you been a Doctor Who fan?
I think I would say since about 2006, maybe.
Christopher Eccleston?
Yeah. Well, no. My first episode that I ever saw of Doctor Who, of the new Who, was Tooth and Claw. And I think I'd seen, like, little bits of classic Who when I was a kid, but didn't really know what it was. But, yeah, my first episode I saw was Tooth
which
and Claw.
Which one was that? Which one was that?
Werewolves and the martial artist monks and the werewolves and... Queen...
And that's when Torchwood. The origins of
Victoria.
Torchwood. Yeah.
First episode with Torchwood.
Yeah. I don't remember no martial art monks.
Yeah, wow.
The very
Dude,
beginning.
I know I didn't miss that episode, but I don't...
They pull out their staffs, and they're doing, like, backflips, and... Like,
jumping over people, and, yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah,
well,
just,
okay, I miss that. Queen Victoria. Okay.
Rose and the Doctor.
Yeah, that was a good episode.
And they're in Scotland.
But I don't remember no monks.
So then after that, I just went back to the beginning and started in with Christopher Eccleston and caught up.
Cool.
Hello, Kat.
Oh, did we lose Kat?
Did we lose Kat? What happened?
We did not lose Kat.
Yeah,
I got excited when she mentioned Christopher Eccleston. And, you know,
oh, geez.
Now let me stop. What did you think about Waters of Mars? Is this what you expect from Who? Were you disappointed? Did you like it? Let's start with that.
Well, the thing is, for me, I'm rarely disappointed when it comes to Doctor Who. I mean, there's always people that are going to be down on an episode and they're going to find something wrong with it. But I thought that this was a real game changer.
Really? How?
Well, basically, they sort of pulled a fast one on us. Like, let's see, do you mind if I go refer to my write-up?
Sure, go ahead, it doesn't matter. We'll put a link to it in the show notes, so go ahead, refer away.
Okay, well, it's a game-changer because, well, basically, like I said in my review, the Doctor has lost so many people by this point and seen so much death and destruction that, oh, he's just about at his wit's end. So, you know, things sort of take a turn for the crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, that's what I mean by game changer.
So you think, are you referring to at the end where he said that since he's the master of all, well, he didn't say he was the master, but he kind of gave us the sense
the Lord.
That he should do what he want and do it based on how he feel. And if he wants to change time, there's no one to stop him.
That's right, yeah. He said he was Time Lord Victorious. And the way that he said, ooh, I'm good. And, you know, we've heard him say before, oh, I'm brilliant. But just the way he said it and the look on his face and the music in the background when he's like, ooh, I'm good.
For a long time now, I thought I was just a survivor, but I'm not. I'm the winner. That's who I am. Time Lord Victorious.
I just wanted to point out something else.
Okay, good.
Okay. Well, like, for example, in The Fires of Pompeii, mm-hmm. he knows that changing any fixed point in time in history is absolutely against the rules, and not just against the rules, but it could actually mess up timeline and maybe cause the universe to implode or something. He doesn't know. And he knows that in this situation, too. But at the end, he's just so intent on winning that he doesn't care anymore. He just wants to win. It's not about him saving these people. It's about him winning.
Being the Lord. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think he learned his lesson, because at the end, the lady took matters into her own hand anyway. And when he was talking to her, he told her that she always dies. He told her how it would always end. Even if he did interfere, she was a death in a fixed point in time. So
that's right.
She got the message more than he did, and she took her own life.
And it really threw him for a loop.
Yeah. So let's go with Eric. Eric is our resident Doctor Who fanatic.
I guess.
We can go with fat word. That's a comfortable word.
Sure. Waters of Mars. As I said in our last episode when we talked about Doctor Who, I was just like, I'm going to accept this no matter what it is. You know, it's been too long for a proper Doctor Who story. We went over before how most of us were not pleased with Planet of the Dead. And I wasn't really pleased with The Next Doctor either, for the most part.
I love that one.
I think I tweeted yesterday, or the day we were watching Waters of Mars. I think I tweeted the last episode that I really enjoyed or liked was probably Turn Left. And since then, I've been miffed. And so I came into Waters of Mars like, okay, this is going to be gangbusters, because it just looked awesome to me from the thousands of trailers and clips that we've seen. It was a mild letdown for me. I still liked it overall, but it was a mild letdown. It was a mild letdown in that, everything that basically takes place on the station, it's pretty simple. You know, it's very straightforward when you get down to it. They're there. There's this infection in the water. It's spreading. We need to get away. I mean, that's pretty much sums it up. And then, of course, you know, we have little bits here and there in between to fill it out. But it's very simple in that respect. But that's okay. I mean, there was a fair amount of good, creepy parts.
This didn't feel filler to you?
Mildly. But not as much as other episodes. I got a little bit of the filler sensation, but again, I was still okay with it. And it's still, if anyone has ever watched a lot of classic Doctor Who, it still has that familiar feeling of the space station episodes, and it very like the Impossible Planet, Satan Pit, you know, similar kind of feel. And sometimes I'm in the mood for that. I mean, it's something we've seen many times in Doctor Who and going back to the classics.
But do you feel this is a proper episode for after an 8-month return of nothing?
Well, again, it wasn't my happiest.
I'm sensing a slight bias in that question.
No, but it wasn't my happiest return.
Don't sense that. I'm just asking a question.
Too, but it wasn't the
okay. Maybe grandest, there was a little bias.
It wasn't the grandest return to me. But again, I liked it far better than the previous two episodes. So okay. Much more, you know, much more pleased in that way. And so I was generally okay with it. And I like the things that I didn't expect. For instance, at first I was a bit confused by the Dalek reference.
Yeah.
But then I got it. And I
me
was
too.
Like, I was
yeah.
Like, but when I got understood it, I was like, okay. I see what they're saying there. And the whole thing about her taking her life... Now, that seemed fairly logical. I'm sure we all saw it. I mean, once we got to the end of the episode, we all saw it coming. But I was still looking at it. I had to still think about it. This is Doctor Who. That is pretty intense for Doctor
Who. I know.
Who,
that's
a family show. You know, I always look at it in that kind of way. I don't judge this show the way I judge you know, the other primetime shows that we watch. Well, of course, especially not Torchwood. But I mean, the other primetime shows that we watch, like Lost, where you expect crazy things like that, you know, people take their life. But in Doctor Who, that is really getting bold, you know, from everything that's been established. That is pretty intense for our family show.
For me, it was a relief because the Doctor was going a little crazy and a little off edge and feeling a little too impressed with himself on being a Time Lord, and he got a little too powerful for me. So, I don't know. Her suicide, which, you know, is still bad, it was still not as bad as him pretending to be God.
Right, and I love that setup, by the way, of how we're setting up the Doctor to fall. See, this is what adds bonus points to me, you know, for this episode. From what would have been just a simple plot. It would have been a simple filler episode, actually, yes. Just like the episode 42 as well, which was a complete filler episode to me. The one where they're in the ship orbiting the sun. That is, yeah, if they would have just stopped with just the story on Mars, complete filler. But they threw in all the extra stuff to set up, you know, what's going to come.
Okay. Jeff, you had a tweet after you saw Waters of Mars. You still there, Jeff?
Yeah, I'm here.
And your tweet was simply, holy
shit. Oh, yeah. I said holy crap.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, holy crap? Okay.
Holy crap.
Oh, yeah.
The episode started out pretty, I guess, normal. He stumbles along. Stuff happens. Then also he's like, oh, well, I'm all here. And I was like really laughing at the part where he gets to the space station. The captain goes, what's your name, rank, and why are you here?
And attention.
Fun. Yeah. Like, yeah. He's like the happy doctor. And then the episode got to the action part of something's going on. I'm here, but I shouldn't be, but I'm stuck, and I'm going to help you with whatever. And I enjoyed it. And I really didn't figure out how long the episode was, so I wasn't paying attention to the clock. And it didn't seem like that long of an episode for me. But near the end, he was saying that he shouldn't be there, and he was trying to leave. And then when the shit was hitting the fan and during the episode, they were trying to get out of there and block the water aliens from getting to them. And he's like, well, I should leave. And he's just standing there, staring at everyone, going like, this is all happening. And was it because of my fault for doing it? Or he's watching history happen that no one knows about, of what actually happened there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like standing there with his jaw on the floor, just watching everyone. So he finally gets ready to leave and he puts his spacesuit back on. The captain stops him. She really wants to know the truth. I'm like, all right, whatever. Tell her that the place is going to blow up. Fine, whatever. He gets out and I'm like, you got to run. And then he gets sucked back into it again. And I was like, yeah, it's the doctor. It's the fun doctor. He wants to help save the day. And then when he got down, and actually when the place blew up, I'm like, holy shit, they all died.
Yeah,
that's what I thought.
And it's like, okay, then you saw the robot actually going out to TARDIS. And the timing of when they showed the scene with the robot going out to the TARDIS and then the station blowing up, you're like, holy shit, the whole place just blew up because the robot wasn't fast enough or whatever, or just bad timing. And then you see hear the TARDIS sound, and you're like, they all survived, or something happened, someone survived. And that's when the doctors start getting like, holier than thou, I'm the last Time Lord, I'm the Time Lord victorious. And when he was back on the space station helping, or the base helping them out when he came back, I started seeing that something wasn't right with him. And by the time they got back to Earth after the explosion, you saw it that he had lost his marbles.
So you think something on Mars is the turning point for him?
There was something there because he was watching all this history happen in front of him. He'd say, like, well, I could probably prevent this. but I shouldn't, because history has to happen. Some bad things always have to happen for history to be there, for the future to be there and everything. So something snapped in him when he was outside and the escape rocket exploded. And he ran back in there, and he says, I'm going to help you. We're going to do whatever. And then when he saves the three remaining astronauts or whatever they were, the Asian, she just freaks out. She has like a mental breakdown. She goes, I should be dead. I shouldn't be here. I'm back on Earth. And runs.
I just
like
wanted to slap her.
Yeah, and then the guy goes, well, I'm going to take care of her or whatever. And then the doctor just freaks out and goes on with this spiel that he's the last of the Time Lords and he could do whatever he wants to now without any consequences. And then he's like freaking bitch slapped when the captain goes into her house. She realizes that she really shouldn't be alive. And she kills herself. And he's like, holy shit, what did I just do? Because he doesn't like the guns and the violence and all that stuff. And I think he was kind of caring for her because he knew of her through history books and everything.
Yeah.
So he kind of got somewhat attached to her. It's like, I'm sorry, I love you and everything. Not I love you, but you're a great person and you're going to be famous. But I can't tell you anything. I can't be mean to you, whatever. And he's just like, you see it in his face after he turns around and realizes that she just shot herself. That he's like, holy shit, what did I do? I'm such a freaking idiot.
But he was right in that this particular moment in time was extremely important, and whatever needed to happen needed to happen. What he did not realize that maybe he needed to be there to witness this in this fashion, because he was part of the important thing in turning and changing point for anything. Maybe
I don't think he actually changed anything with the history itself. The only thing he changed was that.
Not that it changed, that it was important, that it needed to happen the way it did.
I think if he wasn't there, it would have happened the way it did. The only thing that would not have happened is that the captain would have shot herself and died on Earth, as you saw in the little, I guess, website things that came up, showing like the picture of each and their eulogies. That you saw that change, which was it died on Mars, and then it died on Earth. Yeah. And then it said showed the two survivors of the incident, and I didn't kind of read that fast, and I'll probably go back and try to stop it with the program I have on my Mac to read that stuff. But he did change the fact that those two are alive, and the captain killed herself instead of them all dying and sacrificing themselves somehow to save the planet and dying all. Right. So it didn't change the fact that, oh, that they're alive now, that stuff won't happen. It still happens.
But it happens differently. Yeah.
I wouldn't say differently, but the captain's granddaughter still gets inspired, whatever, and still does everything. Because that thing did not change. It was I didn't see change.
Right.
So he kind of messed around with stuff. Didn't cause that big of a change in history, but he only changed that two people survived, and whatever happens with them might change stuff, but the captain only changed her eulogy saying that she died on Earth and killed herself. Yeah. I don't think it said she killed herself, but it said she died on Earth.
Yeah. Will, what are you thinking of Waters of Mars?
Well, I think from the aspect of, you know, what... Okay, the doctor obviously lost it there. But I think why he lost her, or how he lost it, I think it says a little bit about Russell T. Davis and what he's been doing with the character.
Oh, you're going writing, huh?
Yeah, well, no. But there's also the aspect of the Doctor Who theory of time travel. As we know, there are several theories of time travel. There's the Back to the Future version of time travel in which you disappear from pictures. There's also the Doctor Who version, of course illustrated in the lovely Pyramids of Mars, a very, very good episode of the original, the fifth Doctor, or fourth Doctor, Tom Baker, obviously, my Doctor. And, well, it's light, you know, it's right. It's the Doctor himself said, you always get a Doctor. I think what the theory of time travel is, the Doctor comes along, enters into a situation whereby he's exposed to a peril, some kind of thing that's going to destruction and destruction. But once he's involved in that, he can't get out of it because he's now linked into that timeline. And as we all know, in the Pyramids of Mars, they left where they were to go to jump ahead, back ahead to 1980, where Sarah Jane comes from, and they opened the doors, and it was a desolate planet because the Doctor didn't stop Saruman. So it's that is how the character worked when everybody was doing it. I think the thing about the Fires of Pompeii was that it slightly changed that aspect, that he's not so much tied into these events, but he's brought along to the event, or he transcends the event, whereby he's there trying to save people's lives, but he figures out that ultimately his work is what destroys Pompeii. He leaves the destruction behind for X amount of people to save the human race, or to save, you know, he doesn't save the person who's next to him, he saves, you know, all those people that person mm-hmm. represents.
Yeah.
And I think in this aspect, he finally said, there used to be laws of time, there is no one to hold those laws together except for me. Ergo, I can do what the hell I frickin' want.
So why did the Ood show up in the end? Are they now policing something or another? Or I think
the Ood are more spiritual than you know, obviously than they were thought to be. And I think that might have been just a vision or a sign, and not necessarily a nude standing there.
I think. Well, actually, did anyone see like the preview of whatever the next thing's going to be at the end yeah. of the episode?
No.
There is an Ood there.
There is.
And,
oh, I didn't
yeah,
know.
And so and he has a brain on his head, not in his hand.
Really?
I don't recall seeing that, but he did look somewhat different.
Oh,
that's all I can remember. I saw it real quickly, and I did go back to watch it again, but I plan on doing it. But there was an Ood, and I think it was talking.
Wow.
You guys didn't watch that?
No, I didn't want to spoil myself.
Oh, so I mean, there was no spoilers in it.
Yeah,
no,
it was
fresh.
You see on TV anyway.
Well, the other thing is...
There's some kind of connection between the Ood at the end of Waters of Mars, and they'll probably be... goes into whatever the next episode is going to be.
But the other aspect of that, which they've used from the beginning on the Christmas special, talking of the Christmas special, which was one? the cloister bell ringing in the TARDIS.
Yeah, of course.
So
what is that about? What is that about?
Well, the cloister bell rings when the TARDIS senses an emergency. You have to remember
that thing. Okay.
The TARDIS isn't a machine. It is a mechanical being.
Huh?
It has an existence. And it really does. I mean,
I'm just being silly.
But it has, you know, it actually has, well, for want of a better term, a soul. And when the crazy doctor walked into the crazy TARDIS and started doing that, the cloister bell starts ringing. And it's like, that's
In Waters of Mars?
Yeah, at the very end. Oh. It starts ringing at the very end of the episode before.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, oh, it most certainly does. Right before
it does. Yeah.
Before whatever happens. Like.
So we are saying that something happened on Mars to him. Something affected him.
Yeah, he's got his head down on the console, and he goes, "Oh, what does he say?" He says something to the effect of, "Sorry, go ahead, Amy."
He says no. Oh. Like, just when he gets back on the TARDIS, he just says no. That's it.
Yeah, and then the cloister bell starts ringing.
No. Interesting. I need to watch.
Yeah,
it
I know.
Again.
Like I said, I've. Now I have to say this in the right order and in the right, theory, but. I love what Russell T. Davis has done about bringing the show back. I like the fact that the show now is more adult than it was when I was, a young adult watching the show.
In which respect do you mean it's more adult?
Well, I mean,
mature.
Captain Jack, the mentions about the throwaway mention of the guy's brother and his husband, things like that. They throw those things, those aspects into the show, which, it might be from one point of view, but at least it's putting it forward. And you gotta remember, this isn't a show watched by strange people like us in England. This is a show watched at 7 o'clock on Saturday nights, or Sunday nights, as it was this time, but on Saturday nights by moms and dads and kids. And that is a big show. It is the hugest show, and it's literally pulling in millions and millions of viewers. And they're putting they've given it to the guy who wrote Queer Like Us.
Queer as Folk.
My mistake, Queer as Folk. And that's not like a small We're Like Them. I don't know. But no. All right, I got two things mixed up.
Yeah.
But no, but
it was cute.
That is a, I mean, that is a huge.
Oh, he's dying again.
No, I'm not. I'm fine.
Okay.
A huge thing to have. It would be like Captain Kangaroo, if Captain Kangaroo was still on the air.
Dude, really? No, because I wouldn't watch the people. Families wouldn't. Did families watch Kangaroo?
No, they didn't. They didn't.
Really. Yeah, okay, you're freaking me out.
It's so heartwarming and British that UK-ish, we don't even have an equivalent. We don't have a show like that. Because everybody remembers their doctor. Everybody has grown up since the 60s with different men playing this role and bringing it forward. And it's shockingly good.
Yeah.
And you know what?
Hmm.
I think that's what makes the show so real. You know, we all feel like the Doctor really could be real. Well, at least I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he is real. I mean, there's a human actor there, and I think it's weird because he's more timeless because he's different people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He transcends time because the character of the Doctor is allowed to transcend time from the 60s and Hartnell till 2010 and Matt Smith. It's a continuity that you don't see in other characters.
Yeah.
But with the possible exception of like Sherlock Holmes or something like that, where you get a very good, you get a Jeremy Brett or some of the radio actors who've done it on the BBC, who are really freaking good at doing it. And, but that is playing a role. It's not making a role your own and having it be part of this continuity.
Nice.
So like I say, I enjoy that aspect of the show. However, I have some relatively severe problems with how Russell writes certain aspects, vis-a-vis women,
Are you talking Waters of Mars? Do you have a specific incident in Waters of Mars?
Not in Waters of Mars.
Let's stick with Waters of Mars this time.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm bringing the bus around. It's a big long turn.
Let's talk about the bus.
Don't say
but
the bus.
Anyway, not the bus. Sorry. The sand in the bus.
I'm flying the TARDIS around here. Right. So, but in this show, what you've got is, I think this is a really good story, which could have been executed better. I think.
Yeah.
Are you talking about the whole series story?
I mean this story, the Wanderers of Mars, could have been executed much, much better.
Well, how would you execute it if you
If I had that power.
I'm just being silly. We're silly here.
No, that's cool. But thank you for granting me that power. I would have put it as if I had it so that the Doctor was physically trying to get away from it. He was trying to go. And every time he went away or tried to get out, he was called back or somebody yelled for help. Or he had to go back in as the hero.
But wait, why would you want to change it in that way, though?
Because he isn't the hero in this story. He's a protagonist, but he's not the hero. He isn't there to be the hero. He's there, if I can put it this way, to be a villain. Violate time.
But if they do what you were suggesting and have him continually try to get away from the situation but get pulled back in, that defeats, I believe, the whole writer's intent. I think that completely takes out away from what their exact purpose was with this particular story. I think
why?
Because it's leading up to something greater.
The whole point of the story was the Doctor taking it upon himself to meddle in ways that he shouldn't meddle. That, I believe, is the biggest
story. You misunderstand me. I am saying that he would do that, but it wasn't. It was kind of, oh, I got a problem. Oh, I got to get away. Oh, I can't really get away because they're carrying me. You know, they're moving. Think about how it happened. What he did. He did nothing. Well, practically nothing that would affect the aliens. He didn't touch the aliens. He didn't razzle the aliens.
Right.
Yeah. You know, It was all his trying to get away and do these aspects. He wasn't fighting the aliens.
There's a bunch of new series Doctor Who episodes where that happens, and also Torchwood as well, where either Torchwood or the Doctor just happen to be in a situation and they don't really do anything, and the whole story plays out, and it's almost as if the Doctor and or his companion are just there to watch. I mean, I could pick them out in every single season.
That's true.
Amy.
Like Blake, I mean, all he's doing there is sending a message to Sally Sparrow through a DVD Easter egg. He's not, you know, trying to defeat the angels because, you know, you can't really, I mean.
I hear what you're saying. But what his actions, obviously that's a Doctor last episode. He was not supposed to be, he's supposed to be, contained just so he's a couple days and it doesn't impact them. But in the story, Sally was moving through the story and was guided by the Doctor. The Doctor physically said, do this, it will save your life. Do that, it will help you. This is how, I'm responding to you, are responding to me in the future, making this tape. He was proactively doing that stuff. Wasn't in this, for instance, they take him to the dome. And then they say, let's go. And he runs with them. There was a thing in the very beginning of that situation where he's looking for people, and with the professor or the head woman, I don't forget her name. They were walking along. He went right out of the scene, she turned towards the camera, and then he comes back. He never does that. He's the one leading the other people. And that's the aspect that changed in the whole feeling and, you know, actuality of the episode, I think. But
go ahead.
But I was going to say, you know, be that as it may, I think this is going to be an interesting ending. And I have to say this. I'm not saying, you know, oh, I hate Russell T. Davis, he's an idiot. I'm saying that...
That's what we're all thinking.
It sounded a little loud.
You were going, ooh, like that? You really were? No.
Nah.
One of my favorite episodes was the episode before the final episode 2 years ago, or last year. I can't remember.
Which episode was it?
It was the one where with Jack, the Doctor, and Martha, where they go to the planet at the end of the universe.
Utopia,
yeah. Thank you. That was a great episode. You know, with the Master and everything. It was so amazingly cool, that episode. And,
that's funny, because I was thinking the whole time, this is how I see, The Waters of Mars is like the utopia of right now. That's the way I saw it.
Yeah, certainly.
It's a setup before the end.
It's setting up a three-part story. Or a two-part story, I should say. But yeah, but I have problems with Russell T. Davis running this show.
So he's not after these two, right? Or no?
No, he stops in January.
Your pain will end in January.
Well, I'm happy. Yes, I'm happy that the new guy's coming in, who
Stephen Moffat.
Moffat.
Stephen, that was it. Moffat. I knew Moffat. I couldn't remember Stephen. Thank you, Amy. But that aspect of his shows, because his shows are unique. He has never had a person die in any of his shows.
Who?
Stephen Moffat. Nobody died.
Well, no, that's not true. Silence in the Library. Yeah, he did Silence in the Library, and what was
Nobody
the other?
Died. Nobody died. They were all kept alive, but in that environment. All those people, all the people who end up, in the library, you know, break into the library and try to figure out where the daughter is. When they come into the library, they're all alive at the end of the episode. I mean, granted, they're in virtual space, but they all live in that computer system.
Okay, well,
so to speak, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but it's different. It's a different aspect. Well, and that's something I know. Well, let me finish. That's what I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to, you know, his approach to it and everything else.
Okay. Well, Mr. Ranty Boy, let's go ahead and move on to Carl. We haven't heard about his opinion on if he's still awake at this point.
They're waiting for this.
Maybe he's asleep.
I'm right here.
Oh, okay. There you are.
I've
been waiting to hear, because Will had his nitpick, and I thought
I heard him lurking. I heard him lurking in the background.
Like, you had your nitpicks about what was going on, Will, and so I thought it would lead greatly into, perfectly into what Carl had to say and his nitpicks about the show. So what do you have to say about this one? Waters of Mars.
Let me just get to my big nitpick, and then we can talk about the other stuff first. All right. Here's my beef. Now, I did enjoy the episode. I had a great time. It was a lot of fun. But the problem is in all space-time, there was only one bad place that the Doctor could have brought the kids. You know, after the explosion, in all of space-time, there was one bad place that he could have brought
the kids.
He is a freaking master of space and time, and I have seen better manipulations of temporal timelines by Bill and Ted, all right? Look. Why in the world would you bring the team back to Earth at the instant the detonation occurs on Mars, drop them off on her doorstep, you know, if he had taken them, just to drop them off in America, you know?
I thought he was taking them back to, like, the 1800s or something.
I was thinking.
Yeah, me too.
The simplest possible solution would have been to drop them off 200 years in the future, bam. No timeline violations, no paradoxes. Everybody could have carried on with their lives. No trouble, no chaos, nothing. That is, he's a time lord. That's the simplest darn solution to this whole thing. But no, he puts them on the doorstep. So you got the first paradox, and I'm not even talking about time-space paradox. I'm talking about people on Earth are looking up, and the woman who was supposed to be on Mars shows up dead in her foyer.
Exactly.
Darn episode. He's like, oh, I can't violate the timeline. Oh, I gotta be careful about it. Any sort of paradox on her doorstep. He drops them. Then you got crazy. What's her name? Running down the street, going, oh, the doctor in the box. The people on the inside. So who knows? People are loose in England at the exact moment that's going on. This was the worst possible. It could be bad. And bust out there and be doctor, you know, and say, I am the time emeritus and all that kind of stuff. He couldn't figure out to move them someplace. Even if he dropped them in the U.S. at the exact same moment, people would have called them crazy bag people. It could have been, they could have lived on, and it would have been just fine. They didn't do, we're not putting two together. We don't know who these folks are. So that was my biggest complaint about this episode. I understand, you know, in terms of a plot mechanism, what they're trying to do. You want to really see the Doctor pissed. All right, I got it. I know that's what you're doing here. But as smart as this series has been, and I mean, even before Dave, the whole history of it, no matter what I have seen in Doctor Who, I have been able to say, okay, I agree with him. I don't agree with him. But it sort of made sense. It was a logical choice. It didn't bother me, didn't grate me that way. For such a simple out for the Doctor to be presented with him, even in that brief moment, you can say, oh, yeah, but he was trying to get away from a nuclear explosion. Master of space-time, he did not have to put her on the doorstep of her own house. Everybody could have been fine. So that was the one thing that really, really bothered me about this episode. I just, that's not cool. That's not cool.
If you want to go a step further, why did he have to go through this at all? And why is this information? Why is what he did at this point with the waters of Mars? Why is that set in time? Why does he get to keep that? Why didn't he just like, okay, I messed this up. Let me go back in time before I met them and not even bother them on Mars and let that play out the way it's supposed to play out without my interference.
You know,
why is his interference?
Curiosity to see everything.
Well, look, with conservation of plot energy here, okay? You know, I'm trying to the physics and story. You know, like, I'm gonna let him have it, okay? So you lost half the crew,
right?
You know, so he lost half the crew. You know, we can pinch it down and say, oh, we had to make a quick second decision. He's opening the TARDIS door remotely. I'll give you all of that stuff, but literally, to put him there, like I say, in all space time. That was the absolute worst possible place for him to drop them off. Because anywhere else, he could have gotten away with it. So that really, really bothered me. You know, so you guys were saying that, you know, this story could have been executed in a different way. I love to see the Doctor go rogue that way. I think, you know, that's long overdue for his character. But for it to happen like this,
It's
such a paper-thin mechanism to make that happen. There have been so many other opportunities where really I believe that the Doctor should have gone over the edge in other stories, in other episodes. For it to happen here this way felt kind of forced to me, and it bothers me. It bothers me a lot.
Okay.
I have a small question about that. Okay, like so he transported them, like Jeff was saying, back onto her doorstep, basically, in England. Once she killed herself, how would the media explain how they got to Earth?
Like, yes!
Thank you.
That is a big question.
Minor detail, because remember the web newspaper that they did the flashbacks to, and when they did the temporal modification to it, it said, you know, died on Earth from Earth. By mysterious causes or something. You know, there was some reference to, like, that was weird in the article that was posted up there.
That's so, Torchwood.
You know.
Well, you know, because they have, like, they are, I guess, the Doctor can talk to the government anytime he wants to, so maybe there was a joint cover-up there.
But, I mean, come on. He's got the darn TARDIS. You don't have to take it up with the board. You can just say, oh, my bad, and just jump back a day, you know? Move them someplace else. Seriously, that's...
Yeah. Maybe by this point that the humans on Earth are so used to weird things happening because of the whole Dalek invasion that they're like, oh, okay, she's on Earth, whatever.
Yeah, I basically just wrote it off like that because, honestly, I can't get that too crazy into breaking down Doctor Who episodes otherwise. Like,
really? Come on. Can't you see how he's messing around? That dude always go crazy. Huh? Breaking down Doctor Who episodes.
No, I'm saying those things, like that detail of, you know, how did... the Earth, you know, how do they deal with it? Those things just get fluffed out, like, you know, like, it's like what Amy said, you know, it's just strange things happen, you know. I just write it out because to me it's ancillary to the main point, you know, of like the whole story. It's, you know, that's something they would flesh out in some.
But it takes you out of it when you have those.
It doesn't take me out. That particular one didn't. Because I mean,
because there's so many other things that he could have done.
No, it's true. There are many things he could have done, but in the grand scheme of things, this is the way things work themselves out a lot of times in Doctor Who. You know, they don't get into the devil of the details about those types of things. You know, and yes, it could have been cleaner, and they could have come up, I'm sure, but I'm just not getting hung up on that particular point.
Hey, if I can read the story here. This is Survivor's Story, Brooke Saved the Earth. Nurse Yuri Kragensky and geologist Mia Bennett, the only two survivors of Bowie Base 1, have eventually shed light on the events on the Mars colony and the inexplicable circumstances behind Captain Adelaide Brooke's recent suicide. Kragensky and Bennett heralded Brooke as a hero as they reveal the circumstances under which the courageous captain saved planet Earth. And it goes on, but it doesn't say exactly what they said. But
and they still don't cover how they got there.
No, I think they're going to mention the Doctor, but they don't in the bulk of the headline, okay. If you will.
Yeah. Eric, I had an audio question for you about this particular episode. What was with the wacky running music? When they hang, that music was wacky, and it pulled me. It was like, wonka, 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 and I was like, it could have been clown music, and it was just it seemed kind of immature for Doctor. I mean, Sarah Jane didn't even have wacky music like that. It was just...
They've been doing that. I don't know who's telling Murray Gold, the composer, to do these things, but... yeah, I'm not really pleased with that, and it's been happening a lot. At least going back to the third season, the Martha Jones season, at least that's when I started noticing it get, like, really out of control with the running music. They did a lot in
Utopia.
Like
an 80s montage.
Oh, yeah. My God. Yeah.
Because I really liked, in the trailers that we saw for Waters of Mars, it was very light on the score. And they would show scenes of them running in the trailers and the clips, and it was just quiet. And you would just hear their footsteps, like, pacing down the hallway. I liked it so much better, the ambience in the trailer, than when we actually got, like, the crazy upbeat music, because they've exhausted it a lot.
I mean, it would have made it a little scarier if they'd had some, you know...
Yeah, I don't...
Something else, but...
I don't know what is going on, because, yeah, I really don't like that either, but I've kind of gotten used to it. I've come to accept it, because it's happened a lot, and usually the series finale episodes especially is when it happens, and...
Amy, yeah. Was this scary to you?
I think there were certainly parts that were scary, like, but more suspenseful than scary, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen scarier on Doctor Who, like Blink.
Yes.
That was scary.
Oh man,
but
that was...
these faces of the water monsters.
Yeah.
Well, what's her name? Maggie. I think that was her name. She reminded me of Tia Dalma with the black, you know, from Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh my God! Yeah,
the black stuff coming out of her mouth. Yeah. But yeah, it was scary. Not like no more scary than the episode 42 because I think it had a similarity. But I think the scariest thing to me was the change that happened in the Doctor. That's what was scary to me.
Yeah, Jeff, did this make you scream like a little girl?
Only because I wanted to watch so bad, and then I finally could watch. I enjoyed it. I wasn't scared by it or anything. Some of it seemed to start really quickly with the detection of the alien and how that came about. But I kind of got upset with the doctor at the end. Then he got bitch slapped, and I was kind of like, I love David Tennant. I've said it so many times on Twitter.
Yeah.
But I think I'm kind of ready for him to get the hell out of there because of this episode.
Wow.
It's because he snapped, and he made someone kill themselves.
Oh.
And I'm kind of like, not that I really want that to happen, that I'm glad he's leaving or anything. I still think he's my favorite doctor, but I kind of want to see what Matt Smith will do now.
Okay. Cool. Any last words?
Yeah, I wanted to throw in, because you were asking me if I thought it was scary or not. The thing I love about Doctor Who, in just about every incarnation, is they have been able to do something, I guess, what you call plausible peril. Right? If you're putting a story together and you're trying to get tension about the characters and what's going on, and even with the old school Doctor Who, what I really loved about it is, you see this, saran wrap and scrambled egg inflatable monster coming down the hallway. and it's just, the effects are so ridiculous, And you're going, oh, this is crazy. But then you get into the story, and the bad guys are plausible. There is a real tension about what it is they got planned. That is actually pretty scary. And, they can do that consistently. I mean, look at the nemesis we've had to deal with, even in modern Doctor Who. We've had them running from statues. We had them running from shadows. We had them running from, sand? Now they're running from water. Just these basic things. But each time that they do it, they really create a creepy, believable peril that I have always enjoyed. So, the water on this planet turns your mouth into a goo from the Herculoids. That's supposed to be scary. But somehow, despite that, I'm buying it. I'm still going, man, I'd be kind of running if that chick was coming after me looking like that. It was fun. So I read online, a lot of people were saying, this is a scary, scary episode. There have been scarier episodes. And I thought, the makeup was a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
But the overall concept, just one drop of that water will jack you up. I'm running. It was fun that they built it like that. And I enjoyed that.
Okay, well, guys, this was a very long episode, and I am going to wrap this up before we be up all night. Waters of Mars with Doctor Who. We had Amy, Eric, Carl, Jeff, and Will. And we'll see you at the party next time. Goodbye.
I felt so free. Please don't let this danger just be another dream. Cause my life before you was unreasonably mundane. Never been happier, although we face death every day. I wouldn't have it any other way. It's completely terrifying, but it's so, so exciting. I said I was brilliant and I could change the world. So many places I've been, there's so much more to see. We got galaxies and planets and moons, and an awful lot of running to do. Superseding the binary, 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 binary.
To make the viewers feel like mess is really going bad. What?
Eric.
What the heck is that?
Do you have like zombie war going on?
Yes.
Or
yes.
Could you mute that, buddy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What the heck was that?